If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Said I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. And if I share with
12:09. This is WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. We will do this version of the Business Lunch tomorrow between noon and one as well. This is news about the business scene in Chicago and around the world. And we're not going to take a break on that tomorrow. The rest of the programming day, though, tomorrow is going to be kind of interesting. If you're just joining us now and haven't heard, we're kind of excited and kind of terrified by what we're going to do tomorrow. And that is top and bottom of the hour, when you hear news, say at 12 or 12:30 or any given hour on WGN Radio, you will continue to hear that tomorrow. The newsroom never takes a break. The rest of us will. We're going to give you a break and us a break from talking about the elephant in the room. So we'll find other things to talk about besides the virus. In fact, I don't even think I get to say COVID-19 tomorrow. And I'm not going to talk about that topic tomorrow between 9 and noon. Come on at noon for the business lunch. We will continue to talk about the business scene. And if that's affected by COVID-19, then yep, we will continue to address that on this show. And then Anna DeVlantis will pick up the freewheeling, free form, free of COVID-19 after that. So that's just a little of what's going on here. And it's funny because there's actually been some, aren't you always looking for a little ray of sunlight or hope these days? And I think in the last couple of days, we heard a little bit of that. One was Dr. Most's enthusiasm for remdesivir. I mean, he was pretty enthusiastic about the hope that drug brings us. He was talking about in the fall, say, what if we had enough doses so that people could use it prophylactically? This is not a vaccine. But the idea would be that not only is this going to save hundreds of thousands of lives, but that's the gateway to open the business community back up. These things are so intricately tied, aren't they? So we appreciated his enthusiasm. And I thought Terry Savage, when she was on with us yesterday, was just a lot more upbeat. Now, the markets are off today, but we're not giving back as much as we gained yesterday. So that's the way it's been lately, but I'll take two up and one down if I can get it. Terry Savage just also said one other thing that she cautioned us we will continue to be talking about going forward. I don't know if you heard that conversation, but I think this is a fascinating wrinkle to where the business community, the small business community, the large business community in the Chicago area is going to be going forward. And here's 60 seconds of Terry from yesterday.
There's a big thing coming up. John, this is going to be a subject we're going to talk about a lot. All those companies that got the PPP plan, the payroll protection plan money, most of that, 75%, is supposed to be used to keep your payroll going. Here's what's happening. A lot of those companies are, yay, we got the money, and they're calling up their employees who they laid off and saying, we're going to put you back on the payroll. And so many of those employees are saying, don't do that. I'm making more in unemployment with the federal $600 on top of my unemployment check. I'm making more every week than you even paid me. And here's the catch-22. If you don't go back to work and get on your boss's lower-paying payroll, then you can't certify that you're unemployed. It's like you quit your job. So you can't certify legally that you should get the unemployment.
And one other note while we're, stay tuned to that. I don't know if you are or know someone in that very predicament, but both the employer and the employee have a difficult decision to make there. And the best laid plans of the government are now making it a catch-22, as Terry said, for a lot of people. To find quick links and easy information about this, terrysavage.com is not a bad website to go to. Yesterday, we also visited with the director of tolling for the Illinois Toll Authority. And I don't know how business-centric this is, but I learned something yesterday. So this is a conversation with, what's her first name? Is it Lisa Marconi? Natalie Marconi. This is 35 seconds of a conversation we had yesterday with Natalie Marconi. Did you know this about your transponder that you use on the tolls.
We do not discourage folks from moving a transponder from vehicle to vehicle. As a matter of fact, we encourage it. If you want to move it, our statement is, as long as there is a transponder in the vehicle when you are on the tollway. I'm not going to make you buy 5 transponders if you have 7 cars. You just got to make sure you've got that transponder in the vehicle when you're on the tollway.
So, Natalie, is that new? Because I thought I got in trouble for that before.
Yeah.
No, that's not new. We don't demand anyone to buy anything extra. We just demand that you have an iPass in the vehicle at the time you're using the tollway. That's it.
Did you know that? I did not. I thought that we were cheating when we did that. Some of you are telling us on our text line that you have received fines for moving your transponder from one vehicle to another. We asked her twice about that. I wonder if that happened in another state. That whole conversation came up because I got fined for not having my transponder in the right place on my windshield rather than on my dashboard. But that happened to me in Indiana recently. And that's the impetus for that conversation. And she said, if you have 5 cars, you can put that transponder on all of them. I think you're supposed to register those vehicles. But she said, why? We don't have to charge you for every transponder. How about that? I hope that's the truth. But she's the lady in charge of it. So you'd hope that she would know. Shara Tibkin is a senior reporter for CNET News, focusing often on topics like Samsung and Apple. She joins us on WGN. Hi, Shara. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, but I'm a little surprised because I'm just seeing a story on your site that says that Samsung is warning that sales will decline significantly because of the virus. And I think I saw something else about other digital devices. I would think that those kind of companies would be doing very well.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, tens of millions of people are out of work. If you have a phone that already is doing what it needs to do and doesn't have a broken screen and works just fine, you're probably not going to be buying a new phone right now. Companies like Samsung, they come out with phones, their flagship phones cost $1,000 and more. So if you're going to be buying a phone, you may not be wanting to spend that much right now. Just with all the uncertainty right now, tight paychecks, and we're all also at home, or a lot of people are at home. So you may not find that, that what you have right now is just fine.
Yeah, right. Although I was also thinking the reverse of that. That is, because of that, our smartphones, our computer screens, even our TVs are more vital for work, for interconnection, and for entertainment. But I get your point. If you don't have the money or extra money, or if your company isn't subsidizing it the way they might have otherwise, then sales would go down. Are they discounting prices? What are they doing about that?
Yes. I mean, so what we're seeing is Samsung devices almost always have discounts after they go on sale. But we're also seeing companies introduce cheap phones that are cheaper to start with. So Samsung has unveiled this whole A series of phones. It used to sell it in places like Europe and Asia. And they're phones that are cheaper, but have a lot of the same features that you'd find in their high-end phones. So they're going to have 6 different A series phones in the U.S. The cheapest one starts at $110, and it goes up to about $600. And a couple of those models coming this summer will also have 5G. So those are really low prices for 5G phones and just, smartphones in general.
Yeah, these are smartphones.
Yeah, they're definitely smartphones. They have a lot of the same things. Like the 2 higher end ones that they're selling have multiple camera lenses. You may just not have the best camera lenses or the best processors or the best screen or, the best materials or whatever. But for a lot of people, these phones are going to be good enough. Apple also came out with a cheaper iPhone just this month, the iPhone SE, and that starts at $399, and it has, a lot of the features people are looking for, and, costs a lot less than other iPhones.
Well, I'm thinking of a lot of people that use their smartphones to text, occasionally to talk on the phone, and maybe to scroll through Facebook, right? I mean, that's enough for a lot of people. Maybe they have some apps that they like, but for a lot of people, that's plenty. And some photographs, but really, they're not watching movies. They're not making movies, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when it comes to phone usage, yeah, you know, social media is up there really high, but the camera is definitely one of the most used things on a smartphone. You know, when companies are designing these, that's one of the big things that they really think about. You know, how can they make the photos better? You know, even in quarantine, you know, people may not be taking as many photos as they usually do. You're not going on vacation. You're not, you know, seeing the Great Pyramids or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, the camera is definitely something that people really use and care about for their phones. You know, and they improve so much every year that for a lot of people, the reason they do ultimately upgrade their devices, you know, after 2 or 3 years is because they want a better camera.
And for a lot of people right now with the stay-at-home orders, all the camera they need is one that takes a good picture of their cat. So you're right. they don't need anything too. Yeah. They ain't going to the beach. So maybe.
Yeah, but you have to think we're doing a lot of video chatting, you know, a lot of video Zoom calls, you know, and there's a definite difference in quality between older phones and the newer ones in terms of. You know, the quality of those front-facing selfie cameras, if you're going to be doing a lot of calls. You know, it could be the difference between your image looking nice and crisp or being kind of grainy. Yeah. And, yeah, so I mean, we are still using cameras right now.
Real quick,
maybe in different ways.
On this topic, so Samsung's warning that its sales are going to decline significantly. Has Apple made a similar forecast?
Apple actually reports its earnings today. It warned earlier this year that it was being impacted by the coronavirus. At that time, it was still just really kind of ravaging China. And China is a major market for Apple, but it also is where Apple assembles all of its devices. So it was having issues having devices getting built. People weren't buying them, you know, and it warned at that time it wasn't going to make its guidance. You know, since then, obviously, coronavirus has kind of taken over the whole globe. So there's definitely going to be an impact to Apple. We just don't know quite how much, but that's something we should find out today.
Our Rokan this afternoon is going to be talking about this contact tracing and how these technology companies are doing that, or helping to do that, with one of the state or city's health directors. Now, what do you know about that? What are you hearing about that?
It's really interesting. Apple and Google have been battling basically as long as smartphones have existed. And, you know, now we're seeing them come together to develop this effort to make it easier to track where we're going and if we've been around somebody who tests positive for COVID-19. So kind of the idea, the way that contact tracing works is if somebody tests positive, people kind of manually go through every place they've been, get in touch with everybody they've been in contact with to tell them, hey, you might have been exposed. You should self-quarantine for 14 days. The problem is, you know, that's very difficult and very labor intensive. And when we're seeing these huge numbers of people infected, just kind of the number of people who would have to do outreach just can't keep up with how many people you'd have to contact. You know, and it's also difficult if you live in a city and say you rode a bus or you just went to a grocery store. You don't know necessarily who any of the people were. So you may not be able to notify them that you were infected or the health authorities wouldn't be able to. So the idea is that mobile devices would be able to keep track of where you are. And if your phone pings the phone of someone who later turns out to have COVID-19, it would let you know and say, hey, you need to self-quarantine. You might have been exposed.
You said pings the phone of someone. What kind of communication are we talking about? Somebody I sat next to on the bus that I don't know, or somebody that I shared a text or phone call with?
Oh, so it would be if you've been physically near them. It doesn't matter if, you know, obviously coronavirus is only passed through, you know, proximity. It's not passed through, you know, digitally. So the idea is that that these public health authorities would be building apps, and the apps would basically tell you, hey, you were at this grocery store last week, and it turns out that someone else who was at that same grocery store tested positive for coronavirus. Or, you know, you were walking on the street and somebody else who walked past you 3 days ago now has COVID-19. You should self-quarantine. Or, you know, we don't know exactly what these are going to look like, but that's the general idea.
Yeah, right.
That it's to alert you and let you know that, hey, you might have been infected.
Well, that would be everybody. It'd be very interesting to see then. Think about that. I mean, if you said at a grocery store or just walking around, you may have passed by somebody, and if we determined that they have the virus and the phones know where each other are, therefore you may now have the virus, that'll be a lot of people. So now we've got to figure out, this is something somebody else has to decide above my pay grade, and I guess yours, is, okay, so what kind of proximity, what sort of contact, what sort of locations are we talking about? It'll be a very interesting program for them to write, won't it?
Yeah, I, you know, and that is something that Apple and Google have talked about, is they've made some tweaks to this since they first started talking about it. And one of the things that they've changed is letting the public health authorities set the kind of risk level.
Right.
So there were worries when they announced this that, okay, what if somebody who is holding their phone walks past your window? Do you then get a notice, oh, hey, you were by somebody, but there, it wasn't possible for you to be infected, you were inside, or it was such a short amount of time, or, you know, whatever it is, they're going to be able to adjust the risk settings. So if you're sitting next to somebody on a park bench for 40 minutes and having a conversation and then they are infected, that's definitely higher risk than somebody, you know, walking past you on the street. So these are going to take into account how that works. And will it be perfect? Definitely not. But the idea is that this can just make things a little bit better than the current situation.
So Ro Khan is talking to some of the medical people about that later this afternoon. His show starts at 3 here on WGN Radio. I've got 60 seconds left. I'm looking at a lot of your stories, Shara. One you like particularly right now?
I mean, you know, right now for us, it's just a lot of coronavirus coverage. And, you know, I specifically look at the mobile market. So what impact is this having on everything from 5G to the upcoming smartphones that we'll see later this year? You know, and I think it's interesting, you know, 5G was supposed to be this huge thing this year, rolling out really broadly. You know, basically every new phone that's coming out later this year is going to have 5G. So, you know, it's interesting to kind of think about what's the impact on that. Like, we're seeing how important being online and being connected is, but also, you know, people are watching their budgets more. They're not wanting to spend as much money. So,
yeah, well, that's,
you know, that's definitely something I'll be watching.
Yeah, well, and obviously you have been. Here's a headline from you. Why the $399 iPhone SE is the perfect phone in the age of coronavirus. Shara Tipkin from CNET.com. Nice to talk to you, Shara. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Greg McBride joins us again on WGN. Greg, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
You are the chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. Terry Savage and others have talked to us about some of the moves the Fed has made over the last month or so. Interest rates cut a couple of times, a point and a half, right?
Yes. And, you know, two moves, aggressive moves in March. One was at an unscheduled meeting, and the other one was they moved up their scheduled meeting because of the urgency to take action. So, yeah, having brought those interest rates down, that's bearing fruit for consumers. We see mortgage rates, you know, near record lows. Credit card rates have come down to three-year lows. Home equity lines of credit are lowest in 2.5 years. Both of those are still falling as well. So, you know, some relieving some of the burden of interest payments for people that have existing debt.
I guess if they have existing debt. But a lot of times lower interest rates are an incentive to purchase things, to buy things, to do things. I wonder if these lower interest rates are going to attract people.
Where that really pays dividends is when we're coming out of this, in the, you know, in the sense that when the economy is, you know, getting up and running again, and consumer confidence is on the rebound instead of on the way down, you know, nobody's going to go out and buy a car today just because of low interest rates if they're afraid they're going to lose their job in a few weeks. But you get down the road 6 months and, you know, all of a sudden they feel a lot better about their job situation, their financial status, and you still have that backdrop of low interest rates. You know, that's the environment where those type of transactions will take place. And, you know, we're going to need that type of borrowing and spending from both consumers and businesses that low interest rates brings about in order to generate an economic recovery.
How long do you think the rates are going to be like this, Greg?
Well, the Fed said yesterday they're going to keep the rates at this current level until the cows come home, basically. I mean, they said they'd do it until the economy was almost, you know, well on its way back to where it had been pre-pandemic. We put 30 million people out of work in the last 6 weeks. I mean, it's going to take a long time to get back to that level. So I think consumers, businesses alike have the assurance that rates are going to stay low for the foreseeable future.
I'm thinking about the two tracks then, the consumers and the businesses. And for the businesses, this gives them confidence that they can be a little more aggressive with their rehiring, their restocking, right?
Well, that low interest rates tends to spur investment. Investment, of course, has been they put the complete kibosh on that given the economic shutdown. I think where, that does pay dividends in addition to the borrowing that they've got to do, as you said, as they rehire, as they restock, is those businesses that are going to gain market share coming out of this. You know, they've had competitors that fell by the wayside, that never reopened. Those that are gaining market share and are in a position to gain more by investing, I think that's where that low interest rates can become the tipping point.
What advice do you have for the folks who have lost their jobs and are wondering how they're going to pay the bills? Should they put it on credit cards now or something like that?
Well, start by doing the things like filing for unemployment, seeing if you're eligible for food stamps or Medicaid, but then contact your creditors. Talking about your mortgage lender, whoever has your car loan, or your credit card issuers, explain your situation because there are a wealth of different payment relief options available and on a scale we've never seen before. But here's the kicker. You have to ask for it. It's not going to come to you. You have to raise your hand. So that's why it's really important. I can't stress this enough about reaching out to your lender and seeking some sort of payment relief if you have been affected financially by the pandemic. Getting that kind of relief, particularly for the big ticket items like mortgages and car payments, if you can hit the pause button on those for a few months while you get back on your feet, that really provides some breathing room and lets you focus the limited dollars you have coming in on necessities like food and medicine.
Can anybody do that? If I've got a car loan or a credit card rate and I don't love it, can I call them? And what do you think about the people who are still drawing income but just want to take advantage of this situation?
Now, for example, the CARES Act, if you have suffered a job loss, income reduction, furlough as a result of the pandemic, you are eligible for mortgage forbearance for up to 12 months, as long as you have a government-backed loan. And even loans that aren't government-backed, a lot of lenders are more than willing to work with borrowers because they don't want them to go belly up. They were making their payments on time just fine when the economy was up and running, and it's just a temporary shutdown. So I think you're going to find all kinds of latitude, even if it's not a something that's covered under the CARES Act, whether it's certain type of non-government backed mortgage or even other types of debt like that auto loan you mentioned, not protected under the CARES Act. But if you've had a financial impact from the pandemic, it's worth picking up the phone and making that call. But this isn't, you have to have been in a situation where you've had verifiable economic event, job loss, furlough, had hours reduced, where your income has been greatly impaired. That's really going to be the hurdle to clear in order to get that type of payment relief. It's not something they're giving out just to everybody, if you haven't suffered a negative impact.
I understand that, but forever it's been true that if you call that number on the back of your credit card and say, listen, I'm thinking about going with a different company or paying this off, or somehow I want a different, a better rate, sometimes they'll give you a better rate just for making that phone call.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that's for those that are in a strong position. If they're afraid you're going to take your business elsewhere, you have always had a lot of negotiating power, lot of leverage. If you're in financial distress, that argument's not going to carry any weight. If you're in financial distress and you're saying you're going to take your business elsewhere, they will likely open the door and escort you out.
What about the stock market? Do you think that we've hit the low? What do you think about the recovery? What are you saying to stock market investors, which arguably is all of us?
Yeah, you're right. It's all of us through 401ks and the like. Maintain that long-term perspective. I think that's more important now than ever because look at the volatility we've seen. We saw a 34% drop from late February to late March. Since then, we've seen a rebound of, as of yesterday's close, it was about 30%. In a month. Don't try to time the market or guess the market. The market's best days often come in conjunction with the market's worst days. So, it's time in the market. It's not timing the market. So maintain that long-term perspective. Don't get wrapped up in the day-to-day volatility because there's a lot more of it to come as the economic realities sink in. Market's been rebounding on the prospect of the economy opening up and potential vaccine or therapeutic treatment. But we've got a lot of economic pain and financial hardship ahead. And as those corporate earnings come in throughout the year, I think it's going to produce a lot of volatility in the market. And you just have to maintain the long-term perspective and hang on through it.
Greg McBride is the chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com, Bankrate.com. Nice to talk to you today, Greg. Stay well.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
1241, this is WGN Radio, and Steve Bertrand has this report.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Chicago startup The Mom Project wants to support family-friendly businesses with a new $500,000 fund that aims to boost employment and support companies during this coronavirus crisis. Chicago Inno says the company has launched the Stronger Together Fund. The fund will provide grants to small businesses that have been hit hard by the pandemic. Chicago-based Wowbow is taking advantage of the restaurant shutdown to expand in a way. It's working with restaurants that have more downtime, sending them frozen dumplings to prepare and then sell through companies like DoorDash and Uber Eats. And the state says it's delaying the awarding of 75 new recreational marijuana stores. Those licenses were supposed to be awarded today. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
Now, Wowbow food is pretty good.
The Dow is down 385 points so far today. The NASDAQ down 78 and the S&P 500 down 41.
All right. Now it's Orion Samuelson's turn. Oh.
A look at a green screen at the grain market at the Chicago Board of Trade at the moment. The July wheat contract is up 3 cents a bushel. The July corn contract is up 4.5 cents a bushel. The July soybean contract trading up 12.5 cents a bushel. And despite the many dismal negative earnings reports today, a company that is strong in the agricultural community reported its quarterly earnings today with net earnings of $391 million. That's ADM, Archer Daniels Midland, that had its birth in the state of Minnesota and then moved to Decatur, Illinois, and now has headquarters here in Chicago. But the strong quarter end balance sheet with cash and cash equivalents of $4.7 billion, playing a critical role supporting global food chain and fulfilling customer needs and the other challenges the customers are facing because of the pandemic. And then there's another report. The dairy farmers who are being forced to dump milk because there's not a market for it. But today, the Midwest dairy families of 6,500 farm families across the Midwest announced that they will donate $500,000 to food banks in the Midwest to purchase dairy products for people who are in need. The contribution will be spread across the 10 states that Midwest Dairy serves, including Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Arkansas, and eastern Oklahoma, to help meet the increased demand for dairy products during the COVID-19 pandemic. But I do have the feeling I'm going to be reporting a lot of cancellations of events and meetings. We have already. We've seen some state FFA conventions that have postponed or even canceled their state conventions. And one point to look ahead, the 2021 Commodity Classic Trade Show floor opens to new exhibitors at 9 a.m. Monday, May 11th. And Commodity Classic will celebrate its 25th anniversary, March 4 to 6, from 2021 at the Convention Center in San Antonio, Texas. But beginning Monday, May 11th, if you are an exhibitor who has had trouble getting floor space at the trade show, keep in mind the date, Monday, May 11, they'll begin accepting applications. That's your money on 720 WGN.
At 1248, this is WGN Radio. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, and business reporter Amy Guth joins us again to start with just some of the basic numbers on unemployment. What are you looking at here, Amy?
Yeah, John. So this week, you know, as you know, on Thursdays, the Labor Department always releases an update for the week. Another 3.8 million people submitted claims for an unemployment benefit. So that brings the number up to just over 30 million. It's 30.3 million just over the last 6 weeks. That's a really significant number. That's, at this point, White House economists are saying this is, you know, this might reach 20% by June, which is really just right around the corner. Here we are staring down May. So to put that in perspective, when we're thinking about kind of historical context, at the during the Great Depression, the height of that was about 25%. It was 24.9%, just to kind of put that in perspective. There's some really interesting graphics for more visual people that maybe want to see that. NPR, PBS NewsHour, and Marist kind of put all this data together and made a really interesting chart that is, you know, easily Googled. You can look at what that looks like, of just how staggering that number is compared to about 665,000 in March of 2009 during that recession. So it's a really significant number. It's expected to continue to grow. There's still a lot of people, especially independent contractors and gig workers, saying, hey, I still haven't seen this. There was moves made last time where we were starting to see some of that reflected, but there's still a large number saying that system hasn't already been worked out in every single state, so there's some frustration. So again, that number is expected to grow, but for now it's just over 30 million, which is really a staggering number.
One in five, huh?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it in perspective when you think about, you know, pick 10 people that you know, two right there. That's quite a bit.
And probably not a difficult exercise for a lot of us to do. If I, right now, literally, I can think of several people I know instantly. I don't know how many people I need to know, but yeah, it's not hard to think of a couple of people out of 10 that are out of work right now. McCormick Place is in the news. They were expected to operate at a loss anyway. That's not unusual. We knew that they were hit hard when this virus first hit. Conventions were getting canceled. It's also supposed to be a kind of triage center for COVID-19 patients. What's the McCormick news today?
That's right. So the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority, which is the organization that runs McCormick Place, has come out with a number saying they now project revenue for the year will be about $222.5 million. So that's about $93 million less than it originally budgeted. To put that in a little more, you know, broader perspective there, that also, these events, there are 60 events as of April 20th, 60 events that were canceled or moved online entirely that they were expecting. And so really the broader piece of this is that would have accounted for approximately 640,000 hotel rooms. And then we start thinking about local economic impact, near $900 million through hospitality spending and shopping and things people do when they're in town, when you go to a city for a convention or trade show or something like that. It's a really significant number that's looking, you know, just what an economic engine McCormick Place really, really is. It's, in fact, you know, one of the largest economic engines just in that spot, right in this area. It's a huge driver of the tourism industry.
$900 million?
Yeah. Isn't that significant? That's the impact through hospitality spending and other kind of activity.
Sure.
That, you know, shopping for souvenirs and spending on taxis and lifts and things like that. That's a significant number. It's almost, I mean, 900 million is almost too big to fathom, but
it really
nonetheless.
Is. And, you know, especially just tied to one focal point, even though it's got all of these tentacles. But, you know, I'm standing where you stood many times in the 18-story studio windows, and I'm looking at two hotels that are virtually empty right next to me right now.
That's right. A lot of hotels in the area have been reporting occupancy in the single digits around, you know, other cities in the nation, too. So low. Of course, the city will be using some of that empty hotel space for first responders who can't go home to their families for fear of passing coronavirus to them, or for people who can't safely quarantine at home. There have been moves by the city to use some of those properties, so they're not entirely empty. But as far as revenue drivers of people booking a room, spending the night, paying for it, down in the single digits, down 5-7%, which is extremely low.
I'm looking at a Facebook story here and a Tesla story here, too. Where should we start, Amy?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think they're both really interesting. But let's start with Facebook. So Facebook has announced that now they're going to let users export videos and photos to Google Photos. And this is significant for a couple of reasons. So this is part of something called the Data Transfer Project, which are all these big tech giants like Apple and Microsoft and Twitter and Google. They're all participating in this that focuses on ways for people to transfer data between their online services. You can, so your, you know, Microsoft could talk to Google and Twitter could talk to Facebook, things like that. Now, critics right away said, you know, this is maybe just a way to kind of skirt some potential regulation, because a lot of regulators are saying, hey, you hold a lot of data from users in this silo. So critics are saying, yeah, this is maybe a way to say, look, we're not siloing data. You can share it. There is not too many ways to export your data from Facebook. This is one option for people in the U.S. and Canada and Ireland. They rolled it out to Ireland earlier, but now it's coming here to two of three North American countries. There's also something called Download Your Information that's been around for a few years on Facebook. It's a little bit murkier because then once you've downloaded it, it's harder to say what you can do with it at that point. But at least photos and videos, here's a way that if you don't want them on Facebook but you want to save them, you could theoretically save them to Google, which is a story a lot of people are talking about because it, you know, I think this moment a lot of people are talking about privacy and data and the role that it plays in our lives. In one sense, it's really done a lot to connect people at a time when we are feeling physically disconnected from one another. And yet there's a bigger, the stakes are suddenly a lot higher for our data privacy and what we do with it.
I think it's going to be hard to put the genie back in the bottle, though, Amy. You know, Ro's going to talk in a little while about contact tracing, and that's another use of your very private information. Where were you? When were you? Who were you near? And it looks like we're going to embrace that as a means of containing the virus, but who knows where that goes?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of organizations that work on data privacy are really thinking about those big questions right now. Of at what point do you maybe sacrifice a little bit of data privacy for a greater health good? But then, how do you get that genie back in the bottle? I think there's a lot of bigger philosophical questions that are going to be coming up around all of this and what we're doing with our data and how it's being used.
Talk to me about this Tesla story now. It's got a rival named Rivian. What's going on here?
Yeah, so Rivian there's a local component right here. So Ford had partnered with Rivian, which is Tesla's rival. They have this product, they call it the skateboard. It's basically like, this is this car platform that anybody could build an electric vehicle on top of. So Ford had invested very heavily to the tune of about $500 million. And they were going to jointly develop an electric vehicle for Lincoln. There were not a lot of details about this vehicle, but there was hints from leadership at Lincoln that this was going to be maybe an SUV crossover type vehicle. And this is going to happen at the Downstate Normal plant. It used to be a Mitsubishi Motors facility, and then Rivian bought it. So there was a lot of jobs there, and they have decided that they're going to shelve that. They said, we're not necessarily saying it's not going to happen in the future, but for the foreseeable future, we're just not going to do that. There's just a lot of moving parts. We don't know what the industry will look like when all this is over. But what their plan was is they were going to use the Rivian, the so-called skateboard, and build this Lincoln vehicle on top of it. Rivian's also interesting because at one point last year, Amazon had purchased electric delivery vehicles. And so Rivian was on task to supply a significant number of those Sprinter vans we see all over the place, sharing delivering our Amazon goods to us. And so Rivian was kind of making this name for itself very quietly when a lot of people were talking about Tesla and, of course, this personality of leadership in Elon Musk at Tesla and affiliation with SpaceX and all these other things he was doing. Rivian was playing it a little bit quieter. And they were, quietly working in a couple of different places, but right here in the Mitsubishi Motors assembly plant in Normal. But for now, that's on hold. I'm hopeful that it will come back up because there was so much conversation when this happened. Ford really talked about it quite a bit. Lincoln really, went all in. Of course, part of Ford Motors there about this crossover vehicle. But maybe, it'll come back. But for now, that has been shelved. No word yet on what that means for this fleet of 15,000 Amazon vehicles, but we shall see what happens to Rivian.
Well, we all want to be optimistic. We know that eventually we'll get through this virus crisis, and when we do, you would imagine that market would be there for that kind of vehicle. I got a lot of family and friends in that area, and I hope that that plant is able to gear back up. Amy Guth reports on business on WGN. Thanks for your time today, Amy.
Thanks, John.
It's 12:58. This is WGN.